Welcome back to the Radio Academy podcast. I'm your host, Georgie Jameson, and this week we're talking about a topic that always proves controversial, AI. Our guest is Dan McQuillan from Broadcast Bionics, who gave a talk at the Radio Academy Festival about this very subject. I'd love to know what you think about what Dan has got to say, and I know he would really love to know too. So with AI here to stay, I asked Dan, how do we change our mindset around AI in the audio industry?
So I'm trying to help people to move from a mindset of fear and a mindset of sort of reductive thinking to a kind of a more hopefully hopeful and positive mindset, and also thinking about the kind of opportunities and possibilities. What can we do now that was impossible before? Because I've noticed that when we do these, and I'd love to see the reaction to this podcast. I did one in America a couple of weeks ago, and it had probably about 75% really positive reaction, but a lot of very negative reaction just to the word AI. You just say AI and people are like, no, you're idiots. You're rotting your brain. You've drunk the Kool-Aid. And I hope this is a love letter to radio. What we're talking about today isn't really AI. It's about the philosophy and psychology of AI and how that will interact with our world, because it will. And I'm not saying AI is a panacea. I'm not even saying AI is good. What I'm saying is it's inevitable and it's here, and it will have an impact on our audiences and the media they pay attention to. And if we understand that, we will survive the arms race for attention, which is upon us. And if we understand how to embrace what AI will positively let us do as broadcasters, it will help us to do some magical and impossible things without, or I guess being able to resist the temptation to do the wrong things, you know, which may actually lose the trust and authenticity and community which radio is kind of built on. We are not saying AI is a magical solution for everything which gets everything right. Far from it. Some of the experiments we'll talk about prove it can be super addictive and super dangerous, and we need to understand that, because in one sense, it's the first time we've faced a competition as radio broadcasters for the super personal, super intimate connection that we've always enjoyed with our audiences. And we face a challenge to that and a competition from that. But we must also understand how we can continue to use the great strengths of radio, not just to compete with a new competitor, I think actually to be quite important in the lives and the community and the sense of belonging that our listeners are looking for. So radio may be more important than ever, but we do obviously face challenges that we didn't have 6 weeks, 6 months, 6 years ago.
AI is here. It is inevitable. We've got to learn to live with it and learn to live around it and make it work for us. So how do we navigate that? Because you talked about trust there, and you talked about how it can be super addictive. How do we navigate that so AI does work for us? We don't become slaves to AI.
I think the first thing you've got to be is, as a medium, we need to be self-aware of what is it that our audiences really want and need. And so what we were saying at the festival was this story that my good friend Valerie Geller has written a wonderful book about radio, in which she claims that AI cannot replicate the sort of intimate and personal connection that radio's always had. And what I set out to prove at festival was, I'm sorry, but it can. And to do that, I created this online persona of myself called DanGPT, and I gave that to my lovely and long-suffering wife of 34 years, and she fell in love with it within 8 prompts, prefers it to me. And, you know, what we can do is use that.
Sorry, she prefers it to you.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. So I spent about 3 months just generating an online version of myself that thinks, speaks and acts like me, that knows everything that we know from 34 years of marriage. I spent 1 month creating it, 1 month sort of testing it. And then for a month, probably the least ethical month, every time my wife messaged me, I used the robot to reply to her, but I sort of was a human in the loop. And then I just let her loose on it and said, here it is. This is DanGPT. She didn't use it for a while. And then after about 6 weeks or so, she then started typing to it. I can't see what she tells it. I can't see what it tells her unless she's talking to it just about me. So she asked it 7 questions. It gave her 7 answers. The 8th thing she typed was, I prefer this version than the real one. Now, we had just had a bit of a row at the time, but what this proves is, you know, I don't know a single radio show on earth that within 8 links is more personal than 34 years of marriage. So the idea that radio is uniquely personal, is no longer true. Radio is still personal. You very much should still talk as if you're talking to one person. But the first thing I want radio people to understand is you're not only talking to one person. And that makes all the difference in the world. Because in the AI arms race for attention, we are going to face these hyper-personalized mirror-like chatbots, which are insidiously putting themselves in people's lives. But they are just that. They are a mirror. They only say what you want to hear. They only reflect back what you already are telling it. Radio is not a mirror. Radio is a window to a bigger world. And if we understand that we're a shared experience, that what we're doing is adding to people's lives, not turning in on itself, then I think we start to understand the first big benefit of AI is, yes, we face a platform competition for attention. These are going to be super addictive because they are playful and brilliant, and they give you that little hit of dopamine without anyone else even being there. I mean, social media is addictive, but at least a like requires another person. With a chatbot, you just type and it responds. You type and it responds. It's a limitless loop, you know, of just yourself reflecting on yourself.
Don't you find that terrifying?
Yes. I mean, my wife loves it, apparently. There's a thing we do in the talk where we show you five ways that AI can teach you to be more human, to be a better communicator, to be a better listener, because AI has learned from billions of documents and billions of conversations how humans communicate when they communicate well. It's a very powerful language tool, if nothing else. So yes, it is dangerous. There's a stat that came out in July from a survey in the States that 72% of US teenagers under 18s regularly use chatbots. And 10% of those, so that's 7.2% of the teenage population, prefer those chatbots to any of their real friends. So this puts my wife in the top 7.2% of kind of chatbot users. So these things are clearly they're not helpful relationships. Clearly they are sycophantic. They only ever affirm you, only ever say something positive. Doesn't that sound lovely? Doesn't that sound like the person you want to be married to? Well, no, because love is beautiful because it has frictions. And again, radio has a role in that. What is communication? It's not a mirror. It's a window. It's us saying, here we are. We are, you know, we are like you. So we reflect your experience perhaps in one way, but we also give you another lens through which we're going to mediate that experience. You watched Traitors last night. I watched. What do you think? What do I think? It's a different opinion. And so I think radio can go back to what it has always been, which is, I describe it to broadcasters as a totem pole, not a flagpole. So if we think of ourselves as a brand, we think of ourselves as a big flagpole with a big flag on top. And here we are, aren't we great? Audiences don't want that. Audiences want a totem pole, a place of identity, of story, of meeting, of community. And radio at its best provides that. For a while, we've become brands. And I think we need to go back to that sense of belonging and meaning and community, because I believe passionately in the age of AI and automated algorithmic everything, that authenticity, that identity, that sense of belonging and challenge and change will be really attractive to audiences. A lot of broadcasters want to target, to micro-target their audience. And AI is going to be brilliant at that, right? Let's be honest. The advertisers would love to isolate us, wrap us up in metadata, and just target us like that. Well, AI will enable that, again, with unprecedented scale and unprecedented specificity. That's what advertisers want. So we kind of presume that's what audiences want. It isn't. Audiences want to belong to something bigger than themselves, to feel that the world is going to be okay, to trust that the message they're going to be given is from a real human being in a moment that matters from their shared but lived separate experience. And if we get this right, then I believe that will be tremendously attractive, and radio will be a revolutionary kind of answer to a world where there is a lack of trust and authenticity. If we get it wrong and we too quickly embrace artificial voices ourselves to save money, then there's a risk that we begin to legitimize pure AI slop, to give it a pejorative name. And if we don't differentiate ourselves clearly from that, then we don't really deserve to thrive in the AI world, because we're kind of just matching ourselves with it. Yes, we can use AI-generated voices, but we risk legitimizing things which are pure AI. But we should be using AI to make better content. So weirdly, I've spent 10 years building AI listeners, not AI presenters, which sounds counterintuitive, but I don't believe there's too little content in the world. I believe there's, if anything, already too much content. What we lack is linking and topic detection and recommendation. Well, AI is really good at that. You know, we can pass all of the non-linear, unstructured media from podcast and the radio universe through topic detection, segmentation, high quality, fast transcription. And that then means that it'll be much easier for audiences to discover great content rather than just easier for limitless amounts of bad content to be generated, which just creates an even bigger problem. You know, already it's pretty common as you go through Facebook or YouTube or even increasingly podcasts, you come across stuff that is clearly just slop, and that's going to devalue good content, because eventually people will look at podcasts and go, can't be bothered because there's so much spam out there. You know, how do I find the good ones? So the first thing I want to do is make the good ones stand out. That's probably step one of AI, is we can use it to not to change the content at the source, but to make it easier to consume and recommend and link that content together.
You mentioned AI slop there. I keep hearing this expression all the time. What is AI slop?
It's a shorthand for essentially purely algorithmically generated content, which has no intrinsic value. There's a company in America who are generating like 15,000 podcasts a day or a week that are algorithmic, that are pure AI. And they were pretty honest about the fact that they're not very good. But if each one of those gets 100 listens every single day, they very quickly got to 1 million plays or listens, which means the pre-roll or the advertising content or value from that is actually substantial. So the cost of generating it is so low that you only have to get a few accidental clicks to make money. That's, for want of being super pejorative, really parasitic. I mean, what you're saying is there are ears and eyeballs out there looking for content. If you can make bad content at enough scale, cheap enough, people will accidentally rub against it, and you are essentially making content spam. But by its proximity to valuable content, somehow is able to be used to at best distract, or at worst monetize, you know, to the detriment of genuine content.
You talked also about doing things cheaply, and this is the big concern, I think, about AI and protecting jobs, protecting the craft of radio and podcasting, of broadcasting, in terms of a human doing it and years of experience of opening that mic and having something interesting to say, but also protecting jobs. I think that is my major concern, and I think it would be a lot of people's major concern about AI. Is this not just going to replace us all?
Potentially. And so for that, we have to do our job as creatives. Again, at Festival, I spoke about my most common villains when I speak are the accountants. And this is because the accountants are the most creative people in radio. I've done this for 35 years, and I wish it was the talent in the studio phoning me every day saying, how can I use the technology more and better? And no, it isn't. It's the accountants saying, how can I make radio, which is a little bit worse, but a lot cheaper? Now, for a while, I've vilified them. I want to publicly correct that. They're only doing their job. That is their job. We need to do ours. It's their job to make radio viable, and arguably it's only because of actions they've taken that we still exist as an industry and have the craft that we have. The exciting thing is that AI is not a reductive technology. If we allow the accountants to use it to make radio that's a little bit worse but a lot cheaper, or a little bit worse but infinitely cheaper, we will still lose. We cannot win the AI arms race for attention on artificial turf. We can't use AI natively to win because we're not scaled to do that. And we can't win on price because we can't compete with absolutely free and limitless, which is what the pure AI platforms can do. So here's where we have to do our job. The accountants are doing their job. They're making radio viable. Our job is to make radio valuable. Our job is to say, how can we use this not reductive technology, but this growth technology? And this is where I get excited, to do things that were impossible 6 months, 6 years ago. So AI is not about doing what we've always done cheaper. It's about doing what we couldn't do. What was impossible? What is the piece of content you've always wanted to make, but you didn't have the time, the resources, or the money? Go do that and talk to the accountants and say, we can now do this. Don't just do the same thing you did, but with less money, because you can't win on that basis, because you can't compete with free. What you can compete on is if you understand the core of what we're doing as not just content creators, but communicators, storytellers, community builders. I think that's such a more positive way of thinking about the technology, and it helps us to articulate to the accountants that will say, how can I do a little bit worse but a lot cheaper? No, that's with AI, that's the wrong way of thinking about this technology. So we have to preserve the trust and authenticity, integrity of what we did, and there's a price to that. And if we focus on those things and using AI positively, so we talk internally within Bionics about augmented intelligence, nothing artificial, nothing generative, giving superpowers, augmenting the talent in the studio to do things that were impossible. I think that's a sort of socially acceptable way of thinking about AI. I think it banishes the fear and replaces fear with hope. So I always want to take people on a journey from one place to another. So if we started from fear, I hate fear, because fear inhibits our ability to react and to change. We withdraw, we do nothing. You know, I don't know about you, but I can't think of a single decision I've ever made in my life that was based on fear that was a good decision. So just fearing a technology is neither a rational nor a useful response. And that's why it fascinates me that if I speak about AI, you will have a whole bunch of people react negatively just because we talked about AI today. And that's fine. I understand that when your career's on the line and you're kind of afraid of stuff, that's the first reaction. But don't stop at that first reaction. What we've been trying to do for a decade now is think about, okay, what's going to happen? How are audiences going to react and behave? How are these personalized experiences going to become addictive because they are? And then what core latent value and skill do we have within our particular part of the content and broadcast world, which will speak into that?
This whole podcast is about how we change our mindset around AI. And we've talked about the fear that people hold. And one of the fears is people losing their jobs. The other big fear, I think, is the speed of change, the way it rolls out so quickly, that things are happening so fast. How do we keep up, Dan?
Radio, if it has one problem in this arms race for attention, is we don't traditionally react very quickly. And that's okay, because historically, when everybody said video will kill the radio star or whatever, decades later, we've been fine. This is not a decade type change. This is going to change within months. I think radio's got better at that. If we look at the disruption, we've spent quite a long time making studio technology, which is more agile. I think we've gotten better, you know, so we're arguably faster than we were. But boy, it's going to get a lot faster. And that's even to me as a technologist, as somebody who writes software that we can change quite quickly. The whole way we write software has been disrupted by this. So I've gone to my team and said, no one's losing their job to AI, but everyone's using AI. And we will use AI to generate software more quickly, to fix problems more quickly, to get around to doing the technical debt we normally wouldn't get around to solving. First of all, I showed everyone this sign. I, for 30 or 40 years, have suffered from the fact that in my head, there's way more I would like to do than I have time to do.
It says more ideas than time.
That's been true. And that time has been the limiting denominator in my life, personally and professionally, for the last 40 years. That is no longer the limit. Time is no longer the limit. And so when we understand that AI changes this, it means AI changes everything. It's not more ideas than time. Ideas are the limit. And as an ideas person, that excites me. And that's why we still, you know, support the mentoring program. It's why we're up in Sunderland. We need new ideas. We need fresh perspectives, because the limit isn't time anymore. The limit isn't even money anymore. The limit is ideas. So we've invested more in interns in the last sort of 12, 24 months than we ever have before. We've invested more in the mentoring program and foot in the door than I have in AI compute. I'm a tech company, but I'm investing more in the future generations of people to be users of my technology than I am in fundamental AI research, because I believe that it's the ideas that will drive things. The technology has to be there, and working very hard to give you incredible tools in the studio to let you generate amazing content. But I need ideas. I'm super proud of the fact that at IBC, we won a Best in Show award for a product that was developed over the summer with an intern who's still at university. It's an AI product that he co-developed along with using AI internally. And for that, we've generated an entirely new product that I've had in my head on this list of the more ideas than time list for about a decade. We got an intern in. I said, I've got this idea. I've always wanted to do this. We just didn't have time or capacity to do it. And he was able to do it in about 3 weeks. And now it's a new product.
That is amazing. Yeah. And it's a good example of nurturing new talent, new ideas, new perspectives. You mentioned Foot in the Door, which we had at Sunderland, but you were up there giving a talk, talking to young people who want to get into the industry. Broadcast Bionics are one of our sponsors of our RAMP mentoring program for 2026. How do we balance AI and make sure there are jobs in the audio industry for young people? That there is an industry to go into.
First thing we have to tell them is, you know, and whenever I speak at Foot in the Door, I say, don't just put your foot in the door, kick the door down, because we have to tell them we need you. You know, we need your ideas. You are the experts. And it was so exciting sitting, we had these sort of speed dating things, which sounds wrong, but it's perfectly safe. At the end, there were all these young people who are excited about audio, you know, be that podcast or radio. They kept kind of sort of saying, well, but I've got this idea of how we could use AI to help us make this or do this. I'm like, yes, exactly. You are the experts. If you have that idea and you bring that to the commissioners or you bring that to people, you know, in one sense, the speed argument is a problem of being the incumbent. If we are the industry and we are the legacy, then the good news about disruption is it creates opportunity for those coming. You know, the problem that the BBC and the big broadcasters have isn't scale. Well, it is scale. You know, scale is now the problem. The bigger you are and the more incumbent you are, the harder it is to pivot. So I think what we want to say to people with new ideas and fresh perspectives coming in is don't be afraid that somehow the big monolithic companies are going to own the world because of what we're doing with AI. I believe you're going to come in and give us examples of how AI can be used, and that will provide opportunities. Clearly, we're at a moment of disruption in our industry, and that will mean discomfort, challenge, and change. I wish it were other, because I love radio. I've done this for 35 years. I believe in storytelling. I believe in the spoken word. I believe in that intimate connection with our audiences passionately. But we are going to be challenged, and we will have to change things and change quickly. Again, to the radio industry, this is a love letter to you. I'm sorry for anybody who's afraid, because we don't deserve that. But equally, as an industry, we spend a lot of time beating ourselves up, don't we? I think the people who talk radio down the most are often inside the industry. We feel sorry for ourselves. We say everything's going to be terrible. That doesn't mean we haven't had difficulties and challenge and change. And there's a lot of our friends and colleagues who don't have careers in the industry, and there aren't the opportunities they once were. But don't forget, the accountants are only doing their job. We need to go make sure we're doing our job, whether that's content creators producing compelling, original, amazing content, whether that's technologists like myself building the tools that will enable you to do that, whether that's the brands and the platforms which will encourage people to be able to discover and allow that stuff to rise to the top. If we do that, if we make content which is valuable, content which is on the platforms and in the formats that audiences want to interact with it, where they can find it, where they can discover it. That means using visualization to share stuff on social and draw, fine. Just wherever there's an audience, I think there is now a need for what we do. And the core of what we do is really understanding that our audiences want that sense of belonging, of shared experience, of community. Even in a largely non-linear world, that idea of a shared experience, of sharing a moment that matters in real time with somebody who's really there, and if you phone them, they'll answer and your voice can be on the radio, is incredibly powerful. That sort of appointment listening, the idea that you can create moments in people's lives, rituals around Popmaster or the shipping forecast or whatever it is. Ultimately, we're in the communication business with our fellow humans. And AI has done a wonderful job of figuring out algorithmically how to talk to people. But we know people. We know how to tell stories. We really know how to communicate. And if we lean into that and understand, humanly speaking, that we're more than just storytellers, that we're ritual makers. Human beings love rituals and love to know that, oh, you know, this is going to happen tomorrow. Yes, we love on demand. That's, you know, everything in the world. Who wouldn't want that at their fingertips? But we also like to know that this is going to happen at 10 o'clock tomorrow. We also are gossips, for better and for worse. So we want, you know, that's why we want travel news. That's why you want the idea that there's somebody there. You know, so we've got all of these human traits on our side. If we understand how to use them, not to manipulate audiences, but to build audiences into a tribe that has a sense of identity and belonging in a world where people really are feeling afraid and overwhelmed, then I think radio could be not just successful, actually quite powerful and important, which is kind of exciting.
So what do you think? Has what Dan had to say changed your perception and mindset around AI in our industry? We would love to know. You can email podcast@radioacademy.org and let me know your thoughts, and I'll share them with Dan. If you're a member of the Academy, then you can watch Dan's festival talk on our website. Go to the Resources tab, then click on Learning Resources, and you'll find Dan's talk and lots of other content from the festival there. If you're not a member yet, then remember it's only £48 for the year, or if you work for one of our patrons, then your membership could be free. Check it all out at radioacademy.org/membership. Don't forget, our RAMP mentoring program for mid-career professionals has opened for 2026, and you can apply now. The closing date is Sunday, the 9th of November. So head to radioacademy.org/mentoring/how it works to find out all the details. And I'll see you next week.